be our guide. May we follow his glorious example and tread with unfaltering step his noble path until we too shall attain enlightenment.
All the best of our space and time, our mighty ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha, Prajna, Paramita.
Welcome, everybody. I'm back. Shikumio is back. We're all here. Welcome. So, let's delve straight into homework and see if we have any insights on the Koji Kaiman or the recollection practice. Has anybody made any insights or questions during the recollection practice? Okay, this,
Wait a second.
What?
This is your turn. Wait, you gotta say something here. So, how many people are finding that this is like, when you're trying to remember how the day went, it's just easy and fun and light? Okay, then if not, then what's different? Okay.
Can you hear me? Oh, there you are. I've been finding it hard to focus, but this week in particular, couldn't really put my finger on it, but I found the practice of going through the 16 precepts in the morning with a script was a nice reprieve. But then on the back end of the day, trying to actually remember the little wrinkles that I felt throughout it was hard. But I also remember what you had said last week about spending too much time on it being counterproductive, or 2 weeks ago, but spending too much time on it being counterproductive. So, yeah. So just chewing on that this week.
Thank you.
This is Patrick. I'm actually finding it easy and fun and light, the recollection part. And also like a hilarious lesson in impermanence, because I go through and do the friction aspect of it, and I find these things that bothered the heck out of me 8 hours ago, and they're not bothering me now. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of funny. Why was it so bothersome? It's not real anymore. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's all.
Did any of the precepts come up during, like, something specific come up when you're thinking about a particular problem, like a specific precept, like, oh, is this, maybe I'm dancing around this one, maybe I'm breaking this precept, or maybe this is the one that's active right now for me? No?
I haven't tried. So,
Good, you followed the instructions, we didn't ask you to do that.
This is Sarah. Hi. I was going to say the same thing. I've been having a lovely time with precepts. It's kind of like a honeymoon period and falling back in love with the precepts. And it's been easy doing morning and evening. I've had a lot of time to do it. But then I started asking myself, there is a stuck thing. There is a stuck part. And the stuck part is been like anger coming up. Anger because of what's going on in the world, anger because all my friends are upset, and so that's the one that I've been like, it's getting a little stuck in my throat even. I mean, I get choked up. So I'm working with that one, trying to figure out how to soften it, how to see it from other points of view, how to help the people I live with and friends most of my friends are activists, so hanging out with them is pretty intense. and trying to be the person who de-escalates the anger and tries to, you know, have a conversation rather than a bunch of loud voices and opinions and, you know, hate speech even. So, yeah, that one's been a tough one for me recently.
Do any of the precepts come up, Sarah, when, like as helpful in that situation?
Yeah, you know, not causing harm and, and speaking truthfully and, yeah, all of them. Yeah. And everything does, not putting other people down, bringing the Dharma to things. But when I'm alone, that's easy to do. When I'm with others who are really affected and really acting out, it's a little bit harder. It's probably easier for me to, I think Takumi mentioned this before, to kind of like figure out what is yours to attach to. What is yours? Sometimes staying out of people's way is a better thing to do, just observing. Observing my reactivity to their reactivity. So I'm not angry, but I'm taking on a lot of anger from other people, and so I'm sad. It goes to sadness for me.
Thank you. Hi, I'm John. I want to say that like the precepts, the recitation is good. I have like a pretty solid routine where like in the morning before I have like a cup of coffee and then I do it and then I move on and it's great and it's all routine. And I have not been able to figure out a routine for when to review. And so that continues to be very difficult because I'm just like, I don't know, dinner's at different times. I don't know if it's after dinner, if it's right before bed. It's like most of the time I just want to like go to sleep. And so that continues to be difficult. And I find that when I do reflect, I feel like we're talking about, I mean, I don't know how yet the act of reflection feels like a constant tension between the like, do not dwell on past mistakes and then do not praise self or blame others. I'm like, either I'm doing one or the two. Like it's way easy to be at the end of the day and be like, I can reflect on this day. I did amazing. And then I'm like, okay, is that a thing? And then another day I can reflect on it because I'm just like, well, I did terrible. And it's like, I don't even know the way out of that. Recitation's cool.
How should you get out of that?
One thought I had is like, you know, in the morning you have a real, like an obvious kind of ritual around it. And you know, maybe like, you know, like do your recollection while you brush your teeth, right? You're gonna do it every night, probably, I hope. And like, you know, like it might not be a particularly long one, it might not be your most focused, but like you can kind of guarantee that it'll happen. And there might be something that kind of sticks from that, right? That like, oh yeah, it might continue a little bit.
I don't have the mic anymore, but is there anything with, that's great, I never even thought of that. But like tying it to something else, is there anything about like autopilot lack of presence that gets in the way of doing it that way?
I would, sure. Yes, and it's better than not doing it. And right, and it's right. Like that, my goal with that was to like, okay, how do we like, you know, when you're describing it in the morning, it was like, hey, this is like, it's just routine, it's going, like nothing's needed. That's great, like, you know, practice builds up in that way. So how can you kind of, you know, make use of some of that in the evening?
You know, just like, just doing it just before you go to sleep, I find really good. Like, just literally laying in bed, it can take like literally 3 or 4 minutes. It doesn't need like a lot of time. It's just like getting in the habit of it, you know? So maybe try that too. Still brush your teeth though. anybody else?
One of the ways to get out of that, like how do I do this blahness, is to try to do it to focus on the chronology of the day. Literally, hour, like, it might only take 3 minutes, but to start at the beginning, I woke up, and try to keep the chronology going. Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Okay. We didn't talk about this, but is it a good time maybe to join that recollection practice to, if there is, we've been suggesting that just going through the moment, going through the day and looking for the friction, ickiness, would now be the time maybe to investigate a little more to see if one of the precepts kind of bubbles up, like if there is some kind of like, if there's something there that's maybe not being addressed, or just kind of just touch, do what they're doing already.
I think that's an individual question.
I found that useful. Like, you know, because it's sometimes it's just not apparent. Yeah. Like, and there's just something physical going on, and it's just not apparent, like, really what's going on. And using the precepts to, like, kind of delve into it a bit, I found that useful. Okay, so you can choose to do that or choose not to do that. That's something. Okay, what about. So, last week. What about anything that came up for people last week? Reju presented Do Not Kill, and we discussed Do Not Kill, all the ways we kill, and all the ways we kind of fail at that in various degrees. Did anything come up this week around this precept?
Chini, and I realized that I feel shame because I'm about to say this. So that's not something I knew that I was feeling, which is interesting. But when we were in our small groups last week, I was sharing that last year during the precepts, the Do Not Kill precept made me think about bugs and mice and things like that. And it made me feel more invested to not kill them. But this week, after last week's discussion, it made me feel less that way. The rats are really active, or maybe they're mice, I'm not sure, in my attic. And I was like, not like I was like, I'm gonna kill them. But I felt freed from the obligation that I had developed last year when I thought about the precepts. I don't really know what all that's about.
We've kind of brought up that maybe we're all failing in different ways. Like, gave you permission?
I clearly feel some shame about it because I didn't know that till the second I was like raising my hand. I was like, I should do it anyway.
Okay, thank you.
appreciate the courage.
Yeah.
Thank you. I am Ted. And, yes, I will share that since last week, I related to this. I have held a gun for the first time in my life, and after really, like, almost vowing to never do that. So, I think part of me was curious about investigating that in the spirit of that precept to think about. And part of the reason, I should say for transparency, of holding this gun was just to simply have the knowledge of it, and in order to strive to perhaps prevent harm, or just to, in the spirit of actually like safety, or like to not kill, I needed to like understand this weapon that does kill. I think holding that contradiction was interesting, and it brought to mind questions of, like, like not killing, but having the knowledge of how to kill, or of intimate knowledge of what does kill. And that's what it gave to me.
Thank you. This is Gabrielle. I've been vegan for a while, and I've been vegan because I believe in not harming animals, not for health reasons necessarily, which everyone usually points to first, which I find really, to me, that's amazing. But one thing I decided to commit to is eliminating animal violence and death from language with people I'm interacting with, just sort of as a personal crusade. Because even in my workplace, expressions like flogging a dead horse, or many different ways to skin a cat, or kill two birds with one stone, like these expressions come up. They come up in the literature that I read, and there's just, our culture is so filled with words of violence towards animals, just accepting it like it's nothing. So I tried it out on one of my close friends, and I just, in the middle of a conversation, when she used the phrase flogging a dead horse, and I just stopped her and said, hey, what's in, you know, I told her what my mission was, and I said, what are some different ways that, what's a different expression? We could still use a horse, like, dressing a sleeping horse or something. So I've been trying to find different analogies, using animals still maybe, but in a positive way. And I thought she'd be angry at me, but she actually said, hey, thanks for doing that, you know? And so that's sort of an act that I decided to start doing to advocate for not killing animals. Thank you.
I just wanted to briefly mention, I wasn't here last week, but I've been in this class before, and at one point, something I always reflect on when this topic comes up is that someone somewhere in one of the classes talked about not killing, referring to also not killing the spirit of someone's speech. Yeah. And I loved that, because that's not something I think about nearly as often as I'd like to. And I've been reflecting a lot on like what it means to honor each person's experience, and how like listening deeply to someone's speech is like not killing the spirit of them in your connection. So it's a very different like approach or thought to that topic, but I really appreciated it, and I carry it with me, so.
Yeah, thank you. It's not the most obvious, is it? You know? Yeah, thank you.
I wasn't here last week, was doing the fall class as well. Mm-hmm. And I reflected on this precept specifically, and several thoughts that always come to mind, and I'm not sure where I've, you know, heard them previously, but kind of conceptually, that all communication is a form of news. All news, as in the news, is local. And then the concept, particularly recently, that not only is all news local, but that one death is a tragedy, 1,000 deaths is a statistic. Mm. And that we're continuously surrounded by death. It is the cycle of life. Mm-hmm. And how we give or allow our attention to focus. Period.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll take one more and then we'll move on. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Musa, and I think think that this precept's been with me for the last 2 weeks, even though before we went last week and studied it, because I find myself saying, just in general throughout the day when things happen, do not kill the Buddha. And I think it was funny because I was on a job site the other day and I'm just doing some remodel work, and there's ants in the house. And I usually am mindful about not killing bugs or animals and stuff, and I was cleaning up, and I said, I gotta clean up before the boss comes, everything's gotta be perfect. And these little ants were there, and I was like, hurry up, keep on walking, you know, and it's just, it was coming from a different place, but in that as well, I learned to, like, just have more patience, and to respect it a little bit deeper, and to realize that, it's okay no matter where it is, and to not put other things in front of that precept. Like, you know, I've got to hurry up, or... So that stopped me a lot, and it was really great to hear that in myself when I say, do not kill the Buddha, out loud, whether it's in town or, you know, whatever's going on, I'm noticing the precepts. So I think as well, sometimes I like to say it out loud because maybe I'm planting a seed when people hear me, they could be like, what is that person talking about? You know, and so... It's also a way of not killing because, and me, you know, thinking that I am planting a seed of not killing, maybe that person will go and look that up. And then maybe they'll be able to have that knowledge within themselves. And so it's really great to be able to share that and to give the not killing and to realize that, you know, killing can take patience and to put that first before anything else. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. So, tonight I'd like to introduce we're going to get through two precepts tonight. So the first one is going to be, do not steal. Do not steal, honor the gift not yet given. In the realm of the unattainable Dharma, holding no thought of gain is the precept of not stealing. The self and the things of the world are just as they are. The mind and its object are one. The gateway to enlightenment stands open wide. So, when I read this precept, all of the precepts, not just the first bit, do not steal, for me there's a real feeling of separateness within this. There's a strong feeling of like small self. You can only really steal something if you think of yourself as separate from everything else. I mean, it doesn't. If you don't think that way, you can't possibly steal anything. So I think it's really pointing to like this feeling of like separateness from all things, and a sense of lack, like a real big sense of lack. And like we live like this huge industries in our society that is like. Basically focused on like trying to get us to access this sense of lack that we need something. We're always needing something, right? And they've always got something that will solve that lack and hopefully make us happy, right? I think we all know deep down that's not true. So I looked up the word steal in the dictionary, and some of the things it said is taking something without permission and with no intention to return it, steal a look, steal the show, like attracting the most attention and praise, steal a bargain, and then move quietly or secretively. I think all these, apart from the steal a bargain, they're all kind of like in the shadows, kind of like, you can really get a sense of like this nefarious kind of quality of stealing. I mean, it's all done in the dark, you know, and in the shadows. So, and then I made some notes about all the ways, like the things that came up around stealing. And so one of them I've written down is like, in our daily lives, I know this has happened to you too, but this happened to me embarrassingly, like about 10 days ago. So you go into the store. It's mislabeled. You get charged a little amount or not enough, and then you leave, right? And you've paid like nothing for the item. Like, this happens all the time, especially with groceries and stuff like this. This happened to me like about 10 days ago, at Cash and Carry, and I was buying big boxes of stuff, and they charged me, I think, for one item in the thing, and let me just backtrack. I was in a really crappy, shitty mood, and I was like really like focused, like, you know, like when you're in a pissy, bad mood, and you're very self-focused, and it's all about you. There's a real childlike quality to like wanting to like wanting people to know you're in a pissy mood. And so they charge me for these things, and in my mind I'm like going, that's not enough. And then I realized, you know, I think they charged me for one each, and I've got boxes, but I didn't do anything about it. And here I am in front of you, teaching an ethics class. So, like, but there was a real, like, afterwards, I was like, what the hell went on there? And I really felt like it was something, like, I wanted to punish them because I was in a crappy mood, which is ridiculous, I know, I'm embarrassed to say it. But, like, that's stealing. Like, I was stealing. So, anyway, I just wanted to bring up that embarrassing story there so that it happens so that you can also feel comfortable that you are not as bad a person as I in your groups, right? And if you don't want me to be sat up here next week, I'm sorry. Okay, another thing that came up, we stealing time, right? Like our devices, like that, they're stealing, like in some ways they're like stealing life from us, aren't they? You know what I mean? Like that's a kind of stealing, isn't it? You know, taking more resources than we need, like just generally taking more, like I think of myself at one of those buffets, you know what I mean, where it's all you can eat or whatever. I always go back for seconds, always, what's that about? You know what I mean? Like taking more than we need, like, that's stealing again, isn't it? Stealing small objects from work, like little piddly things that, like, I'm pretty sure everybody's done that. Everybody's thought, yeah, it's okay, they won't miss it. You know, I don't know, it's stealing, right? Entering agreements with no intention of keeping. I don't know if that's relevant to you, but maybe. And another thing, the stories that we tell ourselves when we steal, like even those little things, those small objects, right? It's like there's always like some kind of, like we know when we're stealing, like we know it's wrong, and we kind of have got a little bit of pattern, we've got a little bit of justification for it, you know? And that's interesting, that we've all got that, you know what I mean, to justify it. Like we all know it's wrong, even the little things, we all know. Okay, we're going to rush it along here, so I'd like you to go into some groups of three right now, and then we're going to do a little bit of sharing, and then we're going to quickly come back for another precept, okay? So I'm sorry we're cutting it a bit short, but how about groups of three in 60 seconds? Okay, that's good. Thank you. Okay, thank you. Sorry, I love that you engaged straight away. That's awesome. Okay, so here's what I want to ask you. So I'm just going to move this right along here, but I want to bring your attention to this sentence here. Holding no thought of gain is the precept of not stealing. What do you think What do you think that brings up for you? What does that, how does that, how could that play out in your life there? What's relevant there for you? Okay, we're going to give you a couple of minutes for everybody to have a little share on that. Thank you.
I'm it's impermanent. It's momentarily mine.
To keep in mind this week, maybe look for ways that you may be stealing. I think you might surprise yourself. So yeah, be on the lookout for is this stealing what I'm doing right now? Okay, thank you.
Oh sure, I'll do that. All right, next one, number three of the creative precepts: do not misuse sexuality, remain faithful in relationships. In the realm of the ungilded dharma, not coveting or creating of a narrow attachment is a precept of not misusing sexuality. The three wheels are pure and clear. When there is nothing to desire, we follow the way of all Buddhas. So, this is, you know, any of these precepts are like a rabbit hole, right? It goes and goes and goes, there's realms. And that's also true here. I would say this tends to be, there's a fair amount of turmoil around this for folks, right? There's a lot of shame and sense of judgment and baggage with religion and safety issues, sense of belonging. Like, there's a lot of really core identity stuff tied up in our sense of sexuality. And so what does Buddhism have to say about that? And And that in and of itself is like this strange thing, because it's such a malleable, such a moving target, right? So one of the things Buddhism says is, watch out for this veneer of attachment, right? Watch out for ways in which we're making use of, rather than, a more wholesome way of relating. So, paring this way down, this is about this primordial impulse towards towards union, right? Connection, sense of intimacy. And that's a real basic biological, social, emotional, all the above response. So we all have that energy. We all expressed in lots of ways in life, and that's not, that's appropriate and wholesome. And there's ways in which that energy can get distorted, confused, and misused, and that's this tending towards veneer of attachment, this objectification, coercion, etc., more of a self-centered, acquisitive approach to this realm. I think in exploring this precept for myself, one of the things I talked about earlier was looking for those initial cue. What's the earliest place I can notice there's something going on with this precept? And for me, physical cues are really helpful. And one thing I find, if I'm in kind of the ice might be a little thin here territory, is that there's this sense of being a little off balance, being a little out away from my center. So just take a moment and check that for yourself, and see if you can. It doesn't have to, you don't have to check and see if that's the one for you, but what's a sensation that you might recognize when you are kind of living dangerously with this precept? I also find that it's there's a sense of acceleration, maybe. It's kind of spinny, kind of, there's a lot of sensation. Yeah, Bridget?
I'm reflecting on that, and I'm wondering about other relationships that I don't immediately think of as romantic or sexual.
Yeah.
And those that have some easier access for me to think about what's going on there. And I wonder if you could expand on that a little, because I think one of the things that trips me up about this precept is thinking of it only in romantic or sexual terms because it invokes sexuality.
Yeah.
But I have a sense that that's not the only thing it's talking
about. Yeah, no, that's what I was trying to convey. This is a really basic, your sexuality is a really basic impulse, and it shows up in all kinds of domains in life, not just in having sex with someone, right? It's we find that in you can find it looking out the window, right? that can be, there can be this relishing of the sensory experience. Right? That's sensual. That's close to that. Certainly friendship, certainly how you take care of yourself, right? Lots of realms of life that are touched by this or could have some of that. I think a lot of that's fairly individual, but there's a lot coming around there. Yeah.
Just a very random thought that came up, which is this isn't tied directly into Buddhism, but mm-hmm. I know that in the faith systems that believe in chakra energy or whatever, that sensuality, sense of self, indulgence, all of these are things that kind of tie in together. So it makes sense, I guess, in some way, mm-hmm. not just in that faith system, but that those are
intertwined. Yeah.
Jen. This is Jen. The first thing that comes up for me when I hear you say that is just feeling really good, feeling attractive and confident. And that is what I associate. That is the sensation in my body that I might recognize of I'm feeling sexual energy. And I have mixed feelings about that because on the one hand, I'm wow, this seems really healthy and what a relief because it's not how I normally feel. And that's good, right? But then on the other hand, it does seem very self-centered and very kind of sucking attention and away from a sensitive awareness of others.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of curious about it. Is that sensation, is getting all kind of puffed up or vamped up even though it feels really healthy and it motivates me to do healthy things like exercise or take care of my appearance, like, but is it selfish enough in a way that could be subtly harmful?
Yes, I think that's like up for investigation. I think like my sense there is, you know, it's probably worth zooming in there. And that, like, there are times when, like, oh, like, there's enough of a, like, I'm going to get something out of this, like, motivation behind it that, like, ooh, like, it, like, there's going to be residue, you know? And there are times where it's just like, I've got a lot of energy, right? Like, and great. Like, it's not, like, it's kind of, there's not that, like, self-serving aspect to it. And so, just kind of notice, like, it's really, there's a wide variation there. And times you want to, like, I think it's really useful to, like, cultivate the ability to, like, not have to respond, right? Not have to, like, act something out. But, yeah, we want to notice it.
I hear you saying, like, kind of look at the after effects, like, afterwards? Is it like, afterwards am I feeling like,
Well, hopefully, like yes, but even, like, during or before also, like, I think, you know, we get a sense of, like, where does that come from? Mm-hmm. And there's some cells where, like, yeah, you just know that's like, you're going to regret it later, eventually. And so, like, there's, like, you know, you there's certain, you know, you start to recognize your own hells, right? There's, like, certain, like, ideas or phrases or, like, mannerisms or whatever that, like, appear under a certain influence, right? Like, and so, like, you know, you get to know your own pattern around this. Okay. Yeah. The whole, like, you know, like sexuality has a convoluted history with religion. So does, like restraint. Also has a convoluted history there. You know, Buddhism talks about, like, you know, control of the sense gates, like being aware of what we expose ourselves to, and with the idea that, like, you know, like, as, like, what we perceive, like, that's bouncing around in there, that's creating conditioning, how we respond to it, of course, matters, but, like, to be, like, that in and of itself is an ethical choice, what we notice. And, you know, as I was saying last time, like, trying to move as far up that chain as possible gives you a much greater chance of success in terms of affecting behavior. Trying to, like, yeah, I think that's clear, folks. So, yeah, really trying to work with perception. How do we interpret the world? How do we make sense of it? What is the meaning we take from this situation? That's, like, the juiciest part. In terms of, like how you phrase something, that's way down the line. Yes, it counts. Yes, it's observable by someone else. But, like, if that's what you're focused on, you're leaving so much on the table. And I really want to encourage people to notice those, like, prior selves, like, earlier in the line. Other questions before we get into some group exploration here?
Yeah. This might be like a beginner, like dumb question, but part of this is the three wheels are pure and clear. What are the three wheels?
Oh, yeah.
Could you speak to that?
Then she's going to talk about
the three wheels. Oh, those three wheels.
I'm pretty sure it's desire, form, and formlessness, but I'm not positive about that. So those are three ways of dividing up reality. Could also be the reverse super gift. Yeah. There's a lot of threes in Buddhism, so.
This is Thomas. So this is a tricky one for me, probably is for many people. But I was relating a lot to what you were saying about like the kind of speedy quality, this quality of being like sucked along. Like mm-hmm. It's almost like there's like a dopamine seeking Pac-Man in my head that's like just like kind of leading the charge when I find myself kind of losing control around this particular thing. But it does make me think about like pleasure in general and how like we're advised to relate to pleasure as Buddhists or people who are interested in Buddhist teaching. Mm-hmm. Because obviously pleasure is really important, like to some degree, you know, it's a healthy thing to seek out like nutritious foods or, you know, things that are good for our body or, you know, I mean, in terms of like wholesome sexual encounters, it can be an incredible way to bond with a partner, mm-hmm. you know? So I'm curious about like, yeah, the lines there, like how you navigate or relate to pleasure and would recommend that we investigate it.
Yeah, so it's a sensation, just like lots of them. And like I think the question there is like, so it's not so much that, it's what's the relation there? So like this is a bell, like I can ring it to tell us it's time to do something, or I can like throw it and like there's a wholesome use or an unwholesome use. And so like pleasure likewise, I can be attached to that and like, you know, like really fierce about like getting mine, or like that can be part of life. It's part of the scenery. Sometimes I have it, sometimes I don't, and like great. That's a much more like mature, nuanced, flexible relationship to pleasure. Okay. All right, let's do some groups. So, find two other people. How do you recognize in yourself your own sense of like choice around this? Yeah.
Should we say names first? A little icebreaker. Yukio.
Choice.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. I feel not super clear with myself. I feel like you have to touch it open enough to get us like, engaging with it from different angles. Like the way I'm like to it right now, it's like it's definitely like developing. I feel like the muscle, once the pleasure train or desire, the pleasure has started, there's like, it feels like we're having a lot of chances. I feel really cool. It's almost like once that started, and there's a promise of like fulfillment or reaching a particular place, it'll be satisfying. I feel like I want to use my ability to wait outside. Like, you're right. That's not totally true. But I feel like for me, at least, like, even the things that maybe lead to a certain level, like if I'm depressed, if I'm just like feeling bad about myself, whatever, you know, it's like if I can notice that I'm having those sorts of feelings and like acknowledge that. Give myself a chance that we are truly nourishing or takes back my needs. That could be a way of like, totally avoiding the place where it's like the risk is like to be something that feels like the area where I have maybe the most choice. It's like if I, it feels much harder to feel like I have choice once it's like say if I texted a flower and I have no intention of like having a physical relationship with flower, but like harmless, flirtatious texting. Is it really kind of seem like but it's like if I can notice like, hey, like I feel like something's missing. I feel like there's a hole there. No pun intended. That was not, sorry.
Locating choice within ourselves. But I think that what stands out to me about this precept is the focus on coveting, desiring, and the veneer of attachment, which can happen in so many different realms. and certainly those things out of control in the domain of sexuality can be very destructive. Mm-hmm. But as a general force, it feels like it's relevant in so many other places. And it doesn't feel random that it comes right after a precept about not stealing, mm-hmm. which is often motivated by desire and coveting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a great point, and that like when there is that kind of hard, urgent sort of attachment, that fixating on veneer, like what's underneath that? Like there's somewhere in there, there's like a softer version of that, and like it's much quieter, right? But it's also much more universal, and so like that's one of those like, okay, if I'm feeling this, there's other things also happening. Can I find that? And it's a much like safer place to locate. Yeah, Lindsay.
Yeah, we had a really interesting discussion, and one of the things I thought about initially too, I thought about like myself in high school. I had a crush on somebody, and it was like tunnel vision, and like maybe I wasn't as nice to my friends, you know, when I had it, because this crush with this person was really important, you know. And how, gosh, if I acted that way now, like that wouldn't be good, you know. And I think about like, but still, however, like that energy still exists, like in so many different ways, in so many relationships. And I think even friends, like people who I thought were so cool, and like you sort of become obsessed, is a little strong, but like you get attached to an idea of who somebody is as opposed to who they actually are. And I think that's one of the things. And I think that last comment too also brought up is, and something you sort of alluded to, is like cheating. I think about that too, and that experience of like, it also reflects if this energy is so dominant, like maybe there's something lacking somewhere else that you don't, like your life is split a little bit. And so, yeah, that they're, it's also a way of avoiding at the same time while clinging into something else, to some fantasy.
Okay.
We had a couple people in our group that have been in decade-long relationships and approached the conversation from another angle that I hadn't considered before this, where at a certain point, the misusing sexuality also kind of births a needing to cultivate it. You know, if you're in a different season of your life, for whatever, or in that relationship where maybe there's like a mismatched libido or some other way, like how do you approach that in a healthy and positive way that honors the relationship, but also kind of encourages it to keep developing in that season.
Yeah, moving targets. All right, so obviously that's a very brief touch on this topic. Let's do that. Next week is lying and intoxication.